and then they saw me in a bra, and that was exactly. It.
What's going on, Pearl Jam nerds? You are listening to Single Podcast Theory. I'm Brad Lyons.
And I'm Brad Blazek.
What up?
Hey, man. What's going on?
Not much. How are you doing?
Oh, great.
This is one of those weeks where I don't think we really talked at all.
No.
We're both busy. So it's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, you too. I missed you.
Yeah, man.
It's been a few weeks.
I totally understand you missing me. I mean, that makes total sense. Right. You know, most people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm an easily missable guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, right? We should just leave
that. Where were you? Do you want to explain where you were? Or is that... that's?
I don't have to explain myself to anybody.
That's private life.
Yeah, man. No, I went to Iowa. Drove to Iowa with my sister and the two little ones. For my cousin Keith, it was his wedding, and didn't want to miss it. So, and on top of it, April and Tim and the kids when this airs, man, I think they might be flying to San Diego because they're moving to San Diego. You know, the day this airs or whatever. So. Right. It was kind of a last trip for me and the kids because, you know, I can't exactly just hop on over to San Diego whenever I want to. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was cool to spend that. And it sounds miserable, like, you know, 16 hours in car with a 6-year-old and a 1-year-old. But, man, I think the kids did better than we did. They were just super chill, you know?
Yeah.
I was really surprised. Yeah. They did great. So
I've spent a tiny bit of time with those kids. They seem pretty pretty cool.
They're cool, man.
For being little ones.
Yeah, so thanks so much to Kate and you for making the show happen last week while I was gone.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. It's a good show.
Kate's the best.
Kate is the best. I heart Kate Cotton.
Everyone does.
Well... let's get into, first of all, we need to think, I just realized when I was naming the Pro Tools session, what are we going to name this episode? Episode 71.
Riff Zone.
I thought about that because it's a stone zone.
Yeah.
That's what is, really? This is going to be the Riff Zone.
Riff Zone.
Episode 71, Riff Zone.
Whenever I think of riff, like the word riff, I just think of Hetfield and Metallica.
Yeah.
And I just, Pearl Jam is so not metal, and like the riffs are so heavy.
Right.
But when you suggested this episode, I was like, yeah, Metallica, riff.
Yeah, that's not so much for Pearl
Jam. But that's not what this is. But it's, you know, it's an interesting subject to look at. And, I mean, how many songs did you come up with for this?
Oh, I don't need a list, my friend.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I think this should be this is first in a series of riff episodes.
I hope so. I mean, because that's the thing. I mean, that's one of the things that kind of made me want to do it, is that I kind of realized that while we've done episodes on the guitar players and the band, and we've done like kind of like songwriter episodes or whatever, which is great. But, I mean, Pearl Jam is a guitar band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we've never really talked through... I won't name any names because I don't know what's on your list, but... Yeah. You know, some classic riffs. That was the hard thing for me, is like there was riffs that on a personal list might not have made it, but they can't be ignored either. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
I kind of did a mix of like, these are some classic, like you can't deny it kind of stuff, you know? And then there's the stuff that I just love that maybe everyone else doesn't or something. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I think it'll be fun, man.
Definitely.
Seemed like a good week for, you know, it's about to be Christmas. Seemed like a good week to kind of like do a lighter, chill, mm-hmm. kind of fun episode, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, you want to get into some Pearl Jam story time?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Good evening. This is Storytellers. We are here to tell stories.
We just have friends up here that are listening to stories.
Have I got a little story for you?
This is the true story.
All right, so our first email comes from, or actually it's our first email and it's our Pearl Jam story time for this week, comes from Gregers Jorgensen. Or Jorgensen. I don't know how it is. But he's from Denmark, so...
Denmark.
Denmark. I don't speak the Swedeland language from Norland. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But here we go.
Smorgasbord.
That was the Swedish chef, right? Today we have the chef salad. Oh, yeah, I remember, dude. Woo! It's amazing. All right. Like I can remember all that, but I can't remember
last week
exactly or this morning. Right. All right, Gregers wrote to us. This is from July, so hopefully he's still listening.
Yeah, I know.
He says, "Hey, B. Radleys, I'm a new listener. Episode 52 was my first, but I've already heard a handful of the earlier episodes since then. The stories you get from other Pearl Jam fans around the world is my favorite part. I could tell you my entire story, but instead I'll try and go into detail on the specific event that cemented Pearl Jam as much more than my favorite, much more than just my favorite band. It's the story of my first Pearl Jam concert and what it did to me. I first heard Pearl Jam through my older brother. Our parents got divorced when I was a baby and we grew up only seeing each other about once a month. Anyway, he had 10 on CD, and I got a couple of the songs on tape. Ed's voice moved me right away, and Jeremy was the song that got me hooked on Pearl Jam. Fast forward to the year 2000, when I found a newspaper ad for a bus trip to a Pearl Jam show in Hamburg, Germany. At this point in my life, I had never done anything big without my mom, but I really wanted to see Pearl Jam just once. I contacted my older brother and asked him if he wanted to go. He absolutely did. Being from Denmark, it would have been more logical to go to Roskilde, but I decided I would rather see Pearl Jam at their own show rather than a festival where a lot of the crowd didn't come for just PJ. I'm pretty glad I made that call. I live in a small Danish town of about 7,000 people, and in the year 2000 didn't know much of what was going on in the world. The only thing I knew of Pearl Jam Live came from Live on Two Legs. So I knew that, one, they sounded great live, two, they played a mix of songs from different albums, and three, they play a little over an hour. Turns out that was wrong. So we went to Hamburg, and here's some of what I remember from that night. We got a spot about third down on the floor. They opened with Breakerfall. I love that. The crowd was insane, and I spent as much time trying to keep my footing as I did listening to the music. It was crazy as fuck, but it never felt unsafe. Within the first 2 minutes, I was sweating more than I ever had before or since. After about 30 minutes, I told my brother that I was going to leave the pit and find a place to sit. I probably would have passed out from dehydration otherwise. I went to the side and found a seat. However, as I sat down, the lady standing in front of it signaled for me to move. I signaled back that I needed 2 minutes, and she nodded. After those 2 minutes, I got up and watched the rest of the show from the stairs leading down to the floor. I remember Black being awesome. I remember that during the fast songs, the entire floor was bouncing, and that the entire place was shaking during these stretches, literally. I remember that I thought the show just kept going and going and going. I remember that the first taste of the happy feeling that is unique to a Pearl Jam show. I was just so fucking happy. After the show, I found my brother, and he was blown away as I was. I remember telling him, it can't be good this good every time. He agreed, and we were wrong. I was still high on the experience 4 days later when my mom came to my room and told me to turn on the TV. Roskilde had happened, and I came crashing to earth so fucking hard. I still have a hard time dealing with Roskilde today, but that's another story. To round things off, Pearl Jam returned to Europe in 2006, and this time I was the older brother that took my younger half-brother to his first show. He got hooked, and now we've been to 13 shows together in 6 countries. That is so badass. He says, my shows were Hamburg 2000, Berlin 2006, Copenhagen 2007, Berlin 2009, Berlin 2010, Berlin 1 and 2 2012, Copenhagen 2012, Amsterdam 1 and 2 2014, Vienna 2014, Berlin 2014, Prague and Krakow 2018. So 18 years and 14 shows later, Pearl Jam means as much to me as they ever did. It's more than music. It's a way of life. Hope this was readable. Thanks for the podcast. Greg from Denmark. Thanks, Greg. That's that Roskilde stuff, man. Yeah, Danke. I don't know. It immediately made me think of, he opted not to go to the Roskilde show. And then what happened, obviously, mm-hmm. which was like a huge moment in the Pearl Jam timeline for a lot of people, not just the band.
Yeah.
But it just reminds me of, I took that Boston flight to New York so many times. And then when 9/11 happened, it just like, I think I had just been on that same flight like a week or two before. You know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah. And it's like, and even if, and regardless, it's just a flight I'd been on a whole bunch, you know?
Yeah.
It's that just that weird thought that you have that, like, I could have been on that plane. You know what I mean? Right. It's not out of the realm of possibility, you know?
Everyone thinks when something like that happens, like, oh, that could have been me. But when you're, like, that close to it, where it literally could have been you if timing was different.
Right. It makes you think,
man. It's got to be a really weird feeling.
Yeah, and you got to, like, not think about it. Or someone like me can't think about it too much because it's like, then I'll, like, totally, like, take every moment in my life and make it one of those moments or something. Or, like, constantly be scared that if I don't do the right thing, like, I'm going to end up on the plane that goes down. Or I'm going to, you know, whatever.
Start thinking, like, the butterfly effect.
Yeah, totally.
Well, what if we, you know, if we got the show was booked a week later, you know, or, you know.
Oh, exactly.
I took a taxi instead of Uber.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Like,
it's just weird stuff, man.
It's cool, so cool, though, to, like, get off the heady, darker stuff. Like, it is cool, though, that it was, like, this passed down thing where then he and his half-brother, he got to do the same thing that he and his older brother did. But he got to be the other older brother. I think that's pretty cool, man. All right, well, thanks, Greg. Thanks for waiting for your email to be read. And I hope you're still listening.
Definitely.
Yeah, man. All right, what you got next?
I think I've got an email from Matt Massey.
Yeah.
All right.
Go for it.
Hey, huh?
I said go for it.
Oh, okay. Just a couple quick points. Jeremy, he's talking about the Jeremy episode we did a couple weeks ago. Jeremy is the greatest song that I never listened to because I've heard it a million times in a span of a few short years in the 90s. I often forget how great of a song it is. Incredible lyrical imagery. I totally agree with him. Yep. That was something I think we talked about on the show. Like, I hadn't really watched the video seriously since back then because I saw it so many times, and it really was strange watching it again.
Yep.
And he gets to that here in a minute. He says, leave it to Pearl Jam to make only one non-live video ever and have it be one of the greatest ever made. Strobe light Eddie faces in the video are awesome as fuck and scary as fuck simultaneously. Congratulations to Kate for making me feel really old. another point I can agree with. Yep. I'm sure you do,
I'm
too.
I'm on, yep.
The Hoots. Brad B., you don't like the Hoots? How dare you,
man,
sir?
Man, you've been fucking with some serious sacred cows in the Pearl Jam community. You don't like the Hoots?
Yeah, I'm good. Bonus fun fact. There is also a Milan, Michigan. We also pronounce it myelin.
Mm.
We were talking about there's a myelin here in Tennessee.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy. It's Milan. Also, what? Also, just watched the video for the first time in years, and wow. I got a pit in my stomach watching Eddie, but especially Trevor Wilson's performance. What a gut-wrenching display. I'm sure it has a lot to do with being a father now, along with our country and the world depressingly being much worse off than when this came out. But man, that hit me hard. I've never had that reaction before.
Yeah, man.
So, Matt,
yeah,
his, Matt Nancy, I agree. I had all those same feelings, you know, and reactions watching it again for the first time in so long.
I think in hindsight, that's one of the things that, you know, he makes the comment about the strobe light Eddie being scary and awesome at the same time.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that when I don't know if you ever do this. Sometimes I try and figure out why I like the things that I like, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where does, especially with music. And I have this thing where I love someone who can be, who can kind of like freak me out a little bit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
In a good way. Not like Maynard kind of freaks me out. And that's what I love about him, you know? And he does it in a completely different way than Eddie, right? And I'm talking about Maynard James Keenan, lead singer of Tool, for anyone that doesn't listen to them or whatever. But I remember basically thinking the first couple times I saw this video, oh, is this guy's not well. You know what I mean? Like, because the context is like, you've had two live videos where, yes, he's intense or whatever, but it's the Eddie that we love in terms of that he is... Even when you go back to those old performances of Even Flow and Alive that were for the videos, he's still like, there is no difference between the crowd and him. He's part of the crowd. He just happens to be standing on stage. That's how it feels with Eddie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He kind of brings you, he wants you to go with him, and he's willing to go with where you are too. You know, like that's the beauty of him as a frontman, is so emotionally hyper aware of the vibe of the crowd. Like, that's his focus. You know what I mean? Like, where are they? What can we do to make this even better? Or is this working? And then to see him kind of act, you know what I mean, in a video, even though it's not acting, but he is in front of the camera and being directed, you know, it's just, it was weird and different for me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I was going to say, it is, I mean, it's hard to describe, like, the faces he's making, like, he's acting out a part, but it doesn't look like an actor.
No, it's like the director is pulling out what's really there.
Right.
You know what I mean? He's not saying, like, he's not in there like, I don't know how to, like, all bubbly and whatever. And he's like, okay, I know it's going to be hard for you, but I need you to be real serious. I need you to think about the part. Think about what the song's about. Like, no. He's already there. He wrote the fucking song.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just trying to capture some of that stuff, you know, which, you know, made him uncomfortable, like we've referenced before. And some of those interviews from the shooting of that video where Eddie's just like, I don't want to talk to you. You know, I mean, this is super weird.
Yeah.
Anyway.
oh God, how do you say it? Like, I don't know. That, like, matched with Trevor's performance.
Yes, totally.
Is insane.
Oh, and then the song. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the song's emotional enough.
Yeah.
You add all that to it, and that's why it's such a memorable video. Thanks for the email, Matt. Sorry, I had to clear my throat. Let's see here. What?
Hey, why don't you excuse yourself?
Oh, no, that was different than your version of clearing your throat.
Okay.
All right, here we go. We got Lucy. What's up, Lucy?
Lucy.
Let's see. She says, oh, so the subject of this email is, I laughed so hard I nearly had an accident. Smiley face. Hi, Brad and Kate. Must say it was so worth waiting for the new episode for 2 weeks. It's always fun. Oh, she's probably, is she a YouTuber? Waiting for a new, did we, oh, we skipped an episode. That's right.
We skipped a week.
A week, that's right. That was from a few weeks ago. It's always fun when Kate joins in and adds to the dynamics of the both of you. Already in the part of reading emails from listeners, you have succeeded in moving me emotionally from one end to the other. I laughed so much with the part where, while she was reading the email, Kate got confused. I forgot about that. With rock fucking. And of course, Brad L. would not let her get away with it. Do you like rock? Do you like fucking? Then you will sure love rock fucking. Great concept. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I'll offer it to my husband.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I didn't see that part. She says, if he has not been a great music lover so far, this will surely change his mind. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think you will be the winner, Lucy. Vanessa's email from Milan, Italy moved me to tears. I understand so well the loss of a loved relative to cancer. I just want to send her a hug. Well, you just did. Then I screamed in surprise as Charming Kate read my email. Oh, she's got a little title for Kate there. Charming mm-hmm. Kate. A pleasant and unexpected surprise, so thank you. And then thanks for the interesting discussion that developed after it. Definitely going to prepare a separate playlist for each member of the band to test the different styles of each. Great advice. Oh, that was referring to the songwriting, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like making
separate. Yeah, trying to figure out like an Eddie song versus a Stone song.
And just be able to hear it when it comes right. on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a whole episode about the excellent song, Jeremy. Perfect. I remember being so surprised by the difference of the visual style in this video when I first saw it. Of course, as a teenager, I did not know how to understand my disappointment, but today I recognize that it bothered me a lot that the band created a video that does not reflect their power as a live band. The overly polished look, the short clips that tell the story of the boy Jeremy behind the song, all these bothered me to take the song to my private interpretation. It felt as though I was spoon-fed the story and image of a rock band. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way before. That's pretty cool.
A different take.
Yeah. I like where your head's at, Lucy. I was not aware that this video had an earlier low-budget version or the No Jeremy version. Now that I've watched it and shirtless Jeff in it, I wish that was the version released to MTV. I like the rough, raw version so much better. So, guys and girls, thanks so much for a great episode. Have a wonderful weekend, Lucy. Wait, do I need to read this PS?
No.
Okay, cool. awesome. Thanks, Lucy. Appreciate it. Yeah, I've never thought of the video that way before. It totally makes sense, though.
Yeah, I hadn't either, but it makes sense. And I think she's kind of hitting on something that the band hit on with not wanting to do videos mm-hmm. anymore, you know? Yep.
Yeah, they're so against doing anything that can seem contrived.
Right.
You know.
Plus, I mean, where are you going to go after Jeremy?
I know,
dude. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to make a better music video than that one.
Well, and they waited until Do the Evolution, right? Was that the next video?
Yes. Okay, yeah.
Cool. That was smart, man. Yeah. And then come back with mm-hmm. Todd McFarlane and just fucking kill it with an animated video. Right. God, yeah. I love that video so much.
And that's a huge concept. I mean,
yep.
like 3 million years of evolution or whatever so it is.
Good.
You know, yeah, it's
for someone
cool.
like me too, that just like, I mean, no matter who you are, like, it's a cool concept or whatever. But for someone that's like, I don't know,
comic artwork
kind of mixed with yeah. nerdy science shit, mixed right. with great yeah. rock and roll and a weird yeah. ass riff. It's like perfect, yeah. man.
Yeah, it's a cool video and just a cool way for them to dip their feet back in the music video pool.
Right.
You know?
Agreed. All right. Thanks again, Lucy. What you got next? You got Isabella?
Give me 1 second. I'm going to shut this door because things are starting to happen.
The house is coming alive.
The house, yeah, people are coming alive. It's 1 o'clock
at
on 1 o'clock, Sunday.
I was going to say at 1:20 on Sunday afternoon.
Things are
things are about to get fucking serious.
Oh yeah, Bears. Okay. No, this is good.
Yeah.
All right, what do I got? Isabella?
Yep.
Isabella.
Bye, ciao.
But, she says, I'm still halfway through the episode, but there are three things I already need to talk about. And I think this is she's talking about the MSG episode. Uh-huh. So the first is that, as Kate did, the children here in Brazil also have a graduation around the age of 10 or 11. I do not remember why I did not have one in 2003. It must have had something to do with me switching schools in the middle of the year. We had the credentials to graduate, but not the credentials to see Pearl Jam at MSG. did you listen to that part where Kate said she graduated from fifth grade?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
And I was like,
in 2003?
I don't know what? When she did. Kate said she graduated from fifth grade. And I kind of like
graduated.
Yeah,
like there's
a
ceremony and everything.
Yes, it's weird.
You know what?
Right?
I think we might have done that too.
Oh my god!
No, fifth grade? No, we didn't do that in fifth grade. I don't remember.
It's weird, right?
It seems a little young for like a. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we had my first memory of a graduation was eighth grade. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
So.
I asked her, I'm like, is that like a New York thing? And she's like, that's a school thing. Like, that's like grade school. We graduated to middle school, which was 6 through 8.
Right.
And I was kind of giving her shit because I'd never heard of that. Like,
so
I do.
Weird. What a weird thing to pick on someone about. Super bizarre.
It just sounded so like. I graduated. Like, that's what a fifth grader would say. Like, I graduated.
I will give you that. This is a 20-something-year-old woman. That is true. You're right about that.
All right. So, also, like Kate, I've never seen anything on Blu-ray. Kate's never seen a Blu-ray before.
Yeah, I got drift to that from reading some emails, I feel like. But,
I mean, I don't think I picked on her for that.
I don't know.
I might have. I probably did. I'm such a dick. I went straight from DVDs to watching things that fell out of the truck of internet content. Interpret as you want.
I get it. I like that.
I
like that.
I do.
Analogy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Things fall off the truck. I shouldn't say that. Should I?
No, you shouldn't.
Things never fall off of my truck.
That means you're fired.
Right. No, but that never happens. But I know other people that stuff falls off of their truck.
Okay.
Let's move on. Me and Kate are the 92 cool kids.
Yeah.
Finally, I love to see how many cultural similarities we have. Here in Brazil, people also say opinions are like assholes. or coos. The letter U is pronounced in Portuguese as you pronounce ooh in English. So, people also say opinions are like coos. Yeah. We also say this made me laugh so hard.
Well, I have a question. So
yes,
she said assholes, but the in Portuguese you would say coos. But is the S on coos a plural, and just one asshole is a coo, and many assholes are coos? Or just one asshole is a coos too. That's what I want to know, Brad.
I think a coos is an asshole.
Okay. All right.
Like a single coos.
Okay.
But I don't know. We also say that opinions are like farts. We also say that opinions are like farts. One can only stand one's own, and they all stink.
Man, a lot of potty humor in this in this last paragraph, and you two are match made in heaven.
Peace in a pod. Yeah. Farts in an asshole. Yep. I love it. I just arrived at work, so I'll finish listening today's episode at lunch. One more thing. Can Kate be part of Single Podcast Theory main cast forever? Please, please, please. Yeah. Love you bunches. Ah. Isabella.
Maybe. I don't know.
There's, okay. We're on a mountain, and me and Kate both fell off, and you can only save one of us.
Oh, no. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Well, actually, it will be easy for me logistically. Like, because
it'd be easier for you to save her.
Yes. Because I could grab her.
Right. There's like four of Kate's inside me.
Yes. Yeah. You know, that'd be a suicide. You'd pull me down with you. Just like in life.
I'm holding you down.
Well, and she's younger. She's got more of a life to live. We're old. And
right, yeah, that's true.
We're at the
true.
End,
yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah. Let's yeah. be honest.
Mm-hmm. We're dinosaurs.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I love that email, Isabella. Thanks for writing in. All right, let's see here. I've got Chris Thomas. I still got his avocado playlist on my Apple Music.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Let's see here. Live at the Garden. Hey, Brad and Kate. Great job by Kate Cotton subbing in for Lions again. She took on the task of trying to keep Blazek from drifting off topic for most of the show. For example, It's a Wonderful Life. For that, you should consider upping her salary. We're going to give you a raise, young lady.
Yeah.
I'm pretty stoked you guys went over the Live at the Garden. I received this DVD as a Christmas gift from my wife 11 years ago and wore it out after receiving it. Just like Kate, we don't buy or don't own any Blu-rays. However, we ironically own a Blu-ray player, which we only play our DVD collection in. However, since I'm too lazy to muster up the energy to find the DVD I want to watch, take it out of its case, and place it onto our Blu-ray player, I usually just end up watching things via the streamings. Before I forget, Kate mentioned the YouTube video she watched didn't have a great picture. I did find... Oh, he sent a link.
Yeah, you can...
Yeah. My thoughts from rewatching this show. I'll start off with my Brad B. like, get off my lawn complaints about a couple of spots in the show that weren't my favorite. Number one, the version of In My Tree lacked the two most important elements that I love about that song. Drums and bass. Not my favorite version. Their start to low light seemed pretty awkward. I do enjoy this song a lot, but unless it's near the top of the set list, it doesn't work very well. Now, with my Kate Cotton like, I've never seen a Blu-ray player highlights of the show. Number one, the version of You Are is probably my favorite performance of this song. It is incredible with the light show they use, and it really works coming out of an encore break. I felt it was their best performance of the set list.
Definitely.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude.
Fucking love it. It's so cool. It's so good, and it is. The lights are fucking awesome on that.
Yep. Let's see here. Just about every track they played off of Riot Act sounded great. This DVD made me go back and appreciate Riot Act more. Their performance of Love Boat Captain and Half Full helped me make those two songs two of my all-time faves. Just like you, Brad B. Yeah. Number three, Grateful Dead, Iron Maiden, The Boss, and now the greatest band in the world, according to Ben Harper, have literally rocked the stage up and down in the garden. Number four, last but not least, Mike effing McCready owned this show, all the way to Yellow Ledbetter, which may be a performance even Brad L. can enjoy. Yep, I agree with that. The show actually propelled me to listen to Riot Act a couple of times today. Some other time, I'll touch upon my feelings for that album, but as I said before, this show really brought out a new appreciation for me on that record. Forced to endure what I could not forgive. Chris. Thanks, Chris. It is funny how another one of those, since we started doing this podcast, observations, that because doing this podcast has gotten me, either forced me or made me want to listen to certain boots again. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how I've noticed the same experience, and Riot Act is one of them. Now, Riot Act is not... like a least favorite record of mine, but it's not a favorite either, right? I mean, I think Riot Act for me was like number 7 or something like that on my list. But it is amazing how going and watching the... Most of the time, if there's something on a record I don't like, if I go and watch a really good live performance of it, it makes it make more sense. And then when I go back to the record, for some reason, I don't know, I like it more.
Yeah.
It just changes the way I some of their live performances changes the way I look at their records. Which makes sense, because they're a live band, you know?
You know, me and Kate touched on this last week, but I think most of the Riot Act songs at this show sounded really good.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I don't put Riot Act as one of my favorites on my list, you know?
Yeah.
But I was kind of surprised, like, oh, that's a Riot Act song. That's really good live.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Thanks, Chris, for another email, man. Appreciate it, dude.
Definitely.
Well, we got one of our...
Oh, OGs.
OGs. Bagel. And I'll just say...
Brad's...
I'll just say real quick, too. It's funny, we always call him Bagel, but just for anyone that's a new listener that doesn't know, when we say Bagel, it's Patrick Bogle is our friend, OG listener. So that's who Bagel is.
And he approves of the nickname.
Okay. Yeah. He doesn't get butthurt about being called Bagel.
Right.
All right, what you got?
Brad's and Blu-ray playerless Kate, and I am not going to try to sing, but he put some lyrics from, like, his review of our episode of Live at the Garden.
Oh, yeah.
He set them to State of Love and Trust. If you want to try and sing it, you can, but I'm not going to do it. Okay.
I don't have it in me right now.
I appreciate it, Patrick, but I'm not going to do it. All right. He says, I think I have probably mentioned before that video killed the radio star. Live at the Garden doesn't quite translate the energy of what was happening in that building that night. Don't get me wrong, I'm glad they released the show on DVD, but it really just provides a limited document of the experience. And I'm just going to say, like, right here, like, I'm so glad he wrote this, because like you were just saying before, like, doing the show and, like, kind of focusing more on, like, an album or a bootleg. Like, before I watched Live at the Garden for this episode, I was like, I like that. I like that show a lot. And then when I watched it and, like, really focused on it, I kind of was like, and I talked about this in the episode, kind of was like, I don't think this was their best show.
Right.
You know, the set list was kind of up and down. Like, it didn't really flow really good.
Mm-hmm.
The performances of each song was good, but there was just something not, like, great about it.
Yeah.
So to hear Patrick talking about how watching the video at home doesn't translate what was going on that night is interesting to me.
Sure.
And I'm glad we're hearing from somebody that was there. So he says, the set was definitely more paced, but it never felt that way being there live. You have to consider some of the context. Pearl Jam were on the home stretch of a 73-show tour that occurred essentially in a 5-month span that saw them begin in Australia in early February and play 4 shows in Japan through the first days of March, only to then crisscross the U.S. and Canada from April through mid-July before going to tempt Montezuma's revenge. This was show number 66, and they were playing the Garden again the next night. I had the good fortune of seeing 9 shows that tour. Caught 4 that week alone, both Camden, New Jersey. Both Camden, New Jersey, outside of Philly shows, and the aforementioned MSGs. Am I reading that right?
Both. I think he's just saying that Camden is outside of Philly. I think.
Oh, like he saw both shows in Camden.
Which is outside of Philly.
MSGs.
And the aforementioned. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, yeah.
I'm sorry. You can cut that out.
Nope.
There were not a lot of bust outs a la Breath at MSG2 in 98, but there were still many big moments where the air in the room just felt different. I was never personally into Love Boat Captain when Riot Act was released, but it just seemed to explode this night. Virtually every song had that spark. A minor flub at the beginning of Low Light, if not for bootlegs,
would have totally been missed because when Mike and Stone hit the first chord progressions, the garden was so loud no one even noticed Ed was alive, let alone stumbling early on in the vocals. So again, dude, this, you know, he's basically saying like, Brad B, dumbass, you had to be there.
Right.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah. I don't know about the dumbass part, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Well, I kind of was hard on the show in a sense.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
I never left my seat the whole night, not even for Wishlist or Better Man, two of my errand songs at the time. Even when they were playing Ledbetter, I stood locked in, although fearful I might miss my train as it was getting very late. The garden just had an air of, you don't know what is coming next. Never expected Low Light, never ever expected Crown of Thorns. They kind of rushed and fumbled through their first visit to the garden, September 10th, 1998. Ed even referenced it at this show, though they certainly made up for it night two in 98. The band was clearly dialed in to not repeat that mistake returning 5 years later. Stone owned the 2003 tour and pushed Mike to another level, but that is a story for another bagel. Peace and happy Thanksgiving. Bagel of then New York, now upstate New York.
Upstate. Where are my people at? Schenectady. Oh, man. Albany, what's up? Buffalo. You got any upstate cities for me?
No, I don't know. Okay. Bayside? Where's Bayside?
I don't know.
Brooklyn?
Never been there. Brooklyn is... Okay.
I don't know. I'm like, you know, fat Midwestern American. All I know is New York City.
Okay, that's fair enough.
It's like Chicago, like people that think that Chicago is the only city in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and everyone, you know, thinks that I, you know, live in the South and don't wear shoes and make out with my sister.
I mean, there are reasons for stereotypes.
Oh, shut up. All right, let's move. Thanks, Bagel.
Yeah.
That shut up sounded really harsh. I didn't really mean for it to be that.
Shut up and die. Yeah. I must have hit a nerve.
Yeah, man.
No, thanks. Thanks, Bagel. I'd like that email because he kind of makes me feel better about the fact that I wasn't there. That's why that show was something special if you were there.
Right. I get it.
And that he was there and watching the DVD, he kind of is like, yeah, it doesn't feel the same. So that's cool.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks again, Bagel. And then we got one more email from another OG. We got Janan.
The sweetest.
Yeah, dude. She says, hi, Brads and Kate. It was another great episode. I love listening to your conversations and jokes. Every time I hear Kate on the show, I realize how much I miss her, and I hope the band announces a tour for 2019 and we can all finally get together. That would be fucking awesome.
It would.
I'm especially writing to thank you for the Live at the Garden episode. It's been almost a year since I watched it. Except for the separate clips, I watched it from beginning to end only once. Its video quality is not that good, and when I watched it for the first time, I hadn't listened to Riot Act yet. So I wasn't familiar with Riot Act songs on the show. After I listened to the episode, I watched it again and appreciated it much more, as Riot Act has become one of my top three favorite Pearl Jam albums. That's awesome. Wow. I didn't know that. And I can say that Live at the Garden has become one of my favorite Pearl Jam shows. Its set list is awesome. I've been listening to and watching hours of 2018 shows for months. They all have similar set lists compared to the band's old shows. So I was looking for something unusual, and Live at the Garden was perfect for that. Why Can't I Touch It, tag on Wishlist, and With My Own Two Hands, tag on Daughter, were amazing. Lucan and Grievance back to back. I loved it so much. Besides, Eddie's voice is so great. And his hair. Swoon. By the way, I don't remember.
No, go ahead.
What?
I was going to say the ladies love a clean cut, short haired Eddie.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's right. This is 2003. He had like the buzz cut, right? Yeah.
That was like the first thing my wife said when I turned it on. She's like, oh, that's different. I like that. Yeah, and then right. Kate said like the same thing when we started talking about it. So, and here's Janan.
I'm gonna shave all my hair off. Let's see. By the way, I don't remember if I mentioned it, but at the end of the movie, an instrumental version of All or None plays. Arc and All or None are my two favorite songs on Riot Act. One plays at the beginning and the other at the end. So this movie is officially my favorite Pearl Jam movie from now on. I have to stop before this mail turns into a love letter to the movie. Thanks again and take care. Lots of love, Janan. Thanks, Janan. It's good to hear from you, as always.
Definitely.
I need to watch that show again. It's funny. I think sometimes... What was their next show after 2003 at Madison Square Garden?
What do you mean?
When was the next year they played that venue?
Oh, the next year?
Yeah.
I don't know. That 2003. I don't know.
Whatever the next one was at the Garden, sometimes I get those set lists and performances mixed up.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's one Garden version of In My Tree that I love. And I don't know if it was from this one or not. But anyway. Well,
no, I like that she says it's so different. The set list is so different than what they've been doing here recently.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe that's why I kind of had a weird reaction to this set list, you know, because I've been listening to a lot of bootlegs the last year or two.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are like 2014 through recent days. And I'm like, maybe I'm just used to what they've been doing here lately, and this 03 was just so different.
There's a good chance of that. That makes sense. I don't know. I'll listen to it or watch it again this week. And
yeah, I need to watch it again through different non podcast
lenses. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Well, and it's on Apple Music. Like if you punch in Pearl Jam like New York, this show is a official bootleg. Also,
oh cool. So surely I have that. I'll look when we get done with this. But thank you everyone for the emails. If you would like to email us, the email address is singlepodcasttheory@gmail.com. You can hit Bradby. What?
I'm so glad you're back.
Why?
Because I had to do this last week, and I just, like, I'm not used to it. Mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding.
I'm used to that.
singlepodcasttheory@gmail.com. You can hit Brad B. up on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Where else are you, Brad? Are we through you?
I'm just out there.
Whatever. You know where the social media platforms are.
Yeah, Google Magic, you'll find me.
Yep. And what else? Yeah, we're also on YouTube.
Are we?
Oh, we are.
Brad Lyons?
After 2 weeks, we're back on YouTube.
Okay, good.
We are all caught up on YouTube. Sorry, December. Let's see. What am I forgetting? Oh, Patreon. If you'd like to support the show, hop on over to patreon.com, patreon.com/singlepodcasttheory. And you can see the different ways that you can help support the show. And we're going to hopefully get together, and Brad B. and I, and find some new incentives and new little fun things for our Patreon supporters, because we super, super appreciate every single one of them, whether they still give or not, whether it's just a short time or, you know, it's been for the last year. We appreciate all of you. So thanks so much. Again, that's patreon.com/singlepodcasttheory. Are we done with all this stuff?
I think we are done.
I think we're done. Let's move on and talk about some riffage.
Riff zone.
All right, let's get into the motherfucking riff zone. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Can you put some flavor on that? Riff zone.
I'll put like a Steve Vai tapping. thing on there.
Or like Twilight Zone.
Yeah. So, we were talking literally last night. Because we were like, we don't have a topic for this week.
Right.
What are we going to do? And I was like, man, we've never really talked about kind of like riffs specifically. Like, guitar is obviously such an important, this is a guitar rock band, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I thought it'd be really easy to just talk about some of our favorite riffs. But then I started going through it, and it's just like, it's too much. So I think this is just going to be a conversation about riffs. We're not making some specific top 10 list or whatever.
Right.
And we'll probably have more of these in the future because we can't get to all of them in one show. And we're going to try and keep it, not talk about riffs for 3 hours in one podcast. So I would even want to jump off a bridge listening to that. And I love this stuff. So which one was that?
That was Starlin.
Oh, Starlin. I love that you know the barks.
She probably wants to go out.
Well, she's going to have to just pee all over your floor. Because we're not stopping.
No, that's
I'm fine. Just kidding. No, do you need to go?
No. Oh, okay. No, Susan and Amanda are both here.
Oh, yeah. Make them do it. Come on.
Yeah. Hey, take care of them
hey,
dogs.
Hey, woman.
Women. Yeah. Hey, woman.
Bring me a beer. My aunt was always, she still is, like a total whippersnapper, like take no shit kind of girl. And I remember one of our, you know, family stories that's been told a million and a half times was when she was like six or something like that. And my grandpa was like, told her to go get him a beer out of the fridge. And she's like, just turned and looked at him and goes, are your legs broken? That's one of those things where as a parent you're just like, touche. Okay, fair enough. I can't even get mad at you for doing that. You know what I mean? All right, so I kind of divided stuff up into like, well, these are like classics, you know, classic riffs. Even if who was one of the emailers earlier that said something about Jeremy, like, I never listen to it anymore because I got totally burned out, but it's like the favorite song I never listened to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of what came to mind for some of my classic ones. And then I had some ones that are just my favorites. And then there's all these that, you know, didn't really make it on some definitive list for me, but I could not mention, almost like an honorable mention kind of list.
Right. Yeah.
So how did, like, give me one of yours. Cause I'm more interested. I think mine might be really predictable, but you're not a guitar player. So I'm more interested in what made it on your list.
Okay. I'm going to throw you for a loop right off the top of the list.
Okay. Do it.
I went with a bass riff.
Ah, I love it.
With Rats.
They don't eat, don't sleep, they don't. I remember I learned that riff in high school because I thought it was so fucking cool.
Yeah, it's like a funky riff that opens the song, but it also kind of like drives the whole song.
Yes.
In the verses anyway. I mean, there's guitars in there, but the bass riff is what is driving the song.
Yeah, and those drums. And definitely.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. There's little, like, weird guitar, I don't know, even know what you call it.
Yeah, they just do weird little fills and, like,
right.
Just
little guitar pieces.
It's just kind of like a jam on guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the meat of the song is that bass part.
Yes, totally.
We've talked about it before, but, you know, as far as Jeff goes as a bass player, as a guitar player, he writes some of the band's really memorable stuff, like Jeremy, like the Rats riff, you know. That's stuff that gets stuck in your head.
Yeah.
Interesting. I did not think you would have Rats on a list.
Yeah.
Never would have thought that. That's awesome. All right, so I'll do one of mine. Let's see. We'll kind of ease into this like a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's probably one of yours too. So let's go with Alive. I mean, again, I never listened to that song, but that is a forever classic opening guitar riff to a song. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
What do you think? What do you think of?
I mean, this one is kind of, besides just being a great, just all, you know, all around great riff, like personally, like the nostalgia I get when I hear this song.
Yeah.
Because this was like, I mean, obviously I'd heard Even Flow, and probably Jeremy. I kind of came late to Alive, but whenever, man, I think I've talked about it before, like Alive, like hearing Alive is what like put me over the top with these guys.
Huh.
Like I really like was like, man, this song, there's something special about this song in particular. Like this is the next level.
Yeah, it's funny.
It, like, took me to the next level of being like, just going from like a casual fan of like, yeah, I like that one Even Flow song, but then hearing this, like, whoa, like these, there's something special about these guys, and that riff, that intro riff, is what does it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and it's such a weird, like, I've always thought that's a super unique riff in the sense that there's not, it's hard to put it into a bucket. Like it, when you think of it's definitely not like a Metallica type riff, right? Like it can't go in that bucket. It can't go in it can't go in the AC/DC bucket, because it's like, it's badass, but it's super melodic at the same time, whereas most riffs are pretty like I don't know, stagnant, kind of like hold on just a couple of notes at a time. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
And this has like,
well,
a,
I think,
like it's a cello, I mean, or something.
The part where you slide down the neck to go from the first part of the first few notes, and then you slide down to the end of the riff, the end of the notes. Just that slide part, like,
out, that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool, man.
I don't know. Yeah. That part always, like, sticks out to me. Like, when I first saw, because, you know, my friend plays guitar, and he like, showed me, like, this is how you play that. And I was just like, oh, like, that's how you make that sound.
Yeah.
Just by sliding your finger real quick. You know, I think Enter Sandman has that. It's like an open note, and then you slide down. And it's like, oh, that, like, in my mind, I would have never thought, like, that's what that sound is. But it's that simple of just sliding your finger from one note to another.
And that's why it kind of reminds me of, like, a string or a cello part, because that's what I think, you know, you even think of a visual of a cello, someone playing cello, and you're gonna like envision those slides up the neck and down the neck, you know what I mean? And that's what that riff feels like to me. I remember learning it when I was younger, and I at the time, of course, like inundating myself, I was just like a sponge. I was learning all kinds of anything that I thought that I could handle. I was trying to learn it as far as like riffs. And because that's easier when you're beginning, because it's just single note stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like single, like Sandman is, other than that first E chord, power chord, it's all single note stuff, you know? And then this came along and I went to, it's like, well, I'm jumping out of a chord, you know, the open A chord. And then just like that slide that you're referencing was the weird thing for me. I'd never done that before at that age. Does it make sense?
Right.
I was like, oh, this is a, like, this is a different thing. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, because yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not a guitar player, but I kind of would mess around with playing guitar. So for me, it was all power chords because that was simple.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And so I would play just, you know, like Am I Evil,
right,
by Metallica.
Sure.
Like, that's all power chords.
Right.
So then to see somebody playing actual notes and sliding your finger, like, in a quick motion like that. Right. You know?
It's yeah, just yeah,
like,
totally.
Oh, that's, like, totally different. And it sound, but it makes such a cool sound.
Yep.
You know?
Well, and so let's just go ahead and do this. I mean, we don't have to go mm-hmm. into a lot of detail about it, but that's a lot of the ways we're describing that Alive riff. I think you could say the same types of things about the Even Flow riff, which to me is just another Stone classic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's doing the same thing. It's that slide. Like, that's a lot of, like, he's sliding down, sliding up on that low E string that's tuned to a D. I don't know. There's just something really fluid and groovy and melodic about especially those riffs from 10 that Stone had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. It's very, again, it's very, he has his own voice as not just a songwriter but and guitar player, but the way his riffs sound are very specific, you know. What's another one for you?
Let's switch gears and go to something off Yield, Do the Evolution.
Boom. That is on my, like, one of my favorites. Like, yeah. Like, that was one, there was no way we were going to not talk about that song
right.
this episode. Yeah. All right, give it to me. What's going on with this?
Well, is this considered Guitarmany?
Oh, at the beginning? Like the main riff? That, No.
Uh-oh. Oh, no?
Nope.
Okay.
It's just a unison thing. Like, Mike, Mike isn't playing a harmony on top of the main riff, if that's what you're asking.
Is it both guitars playing the same riff, though?
Once the band comes in, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what is Guitarmany then? Maybe I don't know exactly what that is.
I mean, it's usually when two guitar players or, you know, someone's playing the main melody as a lead and the other guitar player is harmonizing on top of it. Not playing unison, but harmonizing it. So people say,
so
it's kind of thought of as like a cheesy 80s trick. You know, when you have the two guitar players go up to the front of the stage and the fire just blew and there's, you know, whatever, there's confetti coming down and there's two spotlights on the two guitar players and they're just over-processed, just manicured hair is... they're probably like, they probably have choreography, right?
This, and you know what else? The singer comes over and starts...
air guitaring with the stand?
No, he like comes behind one of the guitar players and he lets him strum his guitar.
I love it, Brad. We're in the right place. We're in the fucking riff zone together.
Yes, dude.
Bandaged hand in hand, my friend, in the riff zone.
Riffing hand in hand.
Oh, we could do this literally forever. But we're going to move on.
Yeah, okay.
Evolution, go ahead.
I mean, it's just that song. Not that anyone wants to see this, but it makes me want to dance.
Yeah, yeah.
It just has that kind of slower tempo, but still like enough to get you moving.
Yes, Stone, that is the magic fucking spice, whatever you want to call it, that is Stone, is his riffs fucking groove so hard. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When Evenflow is played at a, you know, a tempo that maps onto Sanity, not like what they do live, I mean, that's a groovy ass riff, you know?
And I think it's in the video. Like, he, man, I know I've seen it. Maybe it's not even Flo, but just in my head, I see Stone doing that thing where he's like doing his neck thing, like bobbing his neck, but he's also like hopping on one foot and spinning around.
Yeah.
I know, like, what you mean. That makes me want to do that.
Yes. I think, you know, when you're younger and you're a guitar player or whatever instrument you're playing, this was the case for me anyway, is like you kind of go through and you have to do it. And you know you hate it while you're doing it, but it's like you have to like learn how to imitate your heroes, not just in playing, but like physical presence, like stage presence, to figure out what your stage presence is. You know what I mean? That's why you learn other people's songs that you like, and through learning their style, you're going to figure out what your style is. You know what I'm saying? And I remember trying that move that you're talking about. It was like, I'm going to see if I can pull that off. And it was like, oh my God, it was terrible. I just don't have, it was like Frankenstein on stage in a pair of high heels for the first time.
Trying to spin.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It was just not okay. And I learned really quick to not, I can't pull Stone off on stage.
Right. Yeah. No, not, I don't think many can, but he does. He does it.
Stone does the best Stone. Stone gives great Stone. Absolutely. Yeah. Evolution. Yeah. I love how it's another example to one of the reasons why it's one of my favorite Pearl Jam songs and riffs is, it's another example of just a really quirky, dissonant riff. It's not a melodic riff. It's really kind of awkward in its phrasing and the note choices, but that's what makes it so badass. And that's, from a songwriting perspective too, that's the magic of Stone and Eddie, is that Stone can write a non-melodic guitar part, and Eddie knows how to, I don't know how to say this, write a vocal that is emotive, is melodic on top of something that is not melodic. Does that make sense? He's kind of like yell screaming in pitch the whole verse. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, there is melody to what he's doing, but there's not.
This song, the whole song is just weird.
Yeah. I mean, even when he sings the title of the song, Do the Evolution, that's not like a hook melody.
Right.
Like, I'm still... I mean, that's arpeggiating, and it's a pretty melody. He's just barking this whole song.
Right, yeah.
You know? Yeah. It shouldn't work, but it's amazing.
Well, you can even put it in here, but the bridge riff...
That one. Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
You could do a whole episode on that song.
That part. Yeah, that'll be next week.
Yeah, right.
No, but that part right there where he just kind of strums that final part and lets it kind of ride.
I love it. It's that D chord. It's that D sus 2 chord. He just goes brong. He waits a minute, and then
goes back into it.
Woo!
Yeah,
so good. Dude,
Evolution is riff fucking city.
Yeah. Well, all right. So we've proven, I think, our love for this song, and we should probably hold it on this one because this will definitely be a song that we do a whole episode about, not just the guitar riff. Mm-hmm. So we'll leave that there for now.
This, I think Dharma agrees.
Dharma is the girl, right?
Yeah.
She's so psyched on this song right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's like shaking Madison Square Garden right now.
Yes. All right. So what have we done so far? We've talked about Alive, Even Flow, Evolution,
Rats.
That's right, man. I got to write that down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with, well, I gotta say, Corduroy, man. me, that is like a... That opening intro riff, that drone... That is, to me, like a classic kind of guitar moment for Pearl Jam, I think.
Yes.
That comes totally from Eddie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still to this day, it's powerful. Like, at a show, he starts playing the first two notes and everyone fucking knows it right away.
Right.
It's like, yeah, boom, the whole crowd. It's like two notes. Whole crowd's nuts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They go ahead and start clapping, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for that. Yeah, and then it builds up. Oh, you know, yeah, when the main riff come, like the verses come in.
Well, and it's, I think it's another one of those songs, like you were just mentioning with "Do the Evolution," kind of that bridge part. This song kind of does the same thing, like the or whatever you want to call the ba-na-na, na-na, ba-na-na, that repetitive thing,
right?
It shouldn't be cool, but it's super cool. There's just something
right
that works about this really kind of awkward, stabby, weird chord progression thing, but it totally mm-hmm fucking works. Yeah. I love it. And it's kind of, for me, it was the introduction of Eddie's guitar tone too. Because he's got his own tone, you know?
Yeah. And that is, I don't know. I just off the top of my head, I want to say that's like the quintessential, oh God, what is that word?
Quintessential? Yeah.
Quintessential Eddie song.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's kind of like that song is kind of the primer for all of Eddie's songs, if you had to pick mm-hmm one, you know?
Yeah.
Or why don't we do this? Because I'm realizing that we could go on forever, and we've already covered like six songs.
Yeah.
Why don't you add one more real quick?
One more?
Yeah, give me one more of yours.
Let's go with "Save You."
That was going to be somewhere on your list. I love it.
Yeah, I wanted to show Riot Act some love.
Yeah, man. I hear that. I mean, get to what your "Save You" comments, but it is weird that when I was just kind of double checking, like looking through the whole catalog, there are whole records that I wouldn't consider any, and one of them is my favorite, like, I guess it depends on what you consider a riff, but like "No Code," like there mm-hmm was nothing that was going to come from that record as far as riffs go, you know?
Yeah, I had the same thought, like when I started looking at, like, because I just went through like each song real mm-hmm quick.
Right.
And I'm like, I can't wait to get to "No Code." It's my favorite album, and like "Hail Hail" and this and that. And I'm like,
but there's nothing for the riff episode.
Yeah, there's nothing as a riff that stands out, you know?
Sure. Yeah, it's weird, man. "Save You." So talk to me about that one.
Yeah, "Save You." It's just, man, a lot of it is that fuzzy, like dirty tone.
Yeah.
Of just when that song hits on the record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got, so I don't know what the tone is, but it's just got,
it's like awesome,
a weird, yeah. Yeah, it's the awesome mm-hmm setting on the pedal.
Yep.
No, it's just a cool, fuzzy-sounding riff. Hell, I just like it, Brad Lyons.
Okay. Hey, man. That's good enough for me, bro. I thought that was...
No, but it's kind of like a faster tempo song. It's just like... And it's kind of simple. You know, just kind of like... Just a hard-driving, faster tempo song for Pearl Jam. And that's like... That's my favorite kind of songs.
Yeah, agreed. I'm looking at this list and I'm trying to decide where to go. Okay, well, I know... actually, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
Would you consider "You Are" a riff?
No. I thought about this, okay, too. Yeah, because I wanted to... Because that's like, you know, we've talked about it. That's like one of my favorite songs ever mm-hmm by them. But that weird, like, I know it's like a drum. It's like drum. It's like guitars through a drum machine. Something yeah. weird like that, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's not a riff. Like, a riff is like, you got to be playing it on guitar.
Okay.
And it's got to sound like something that I could hum. I couldn't, like, hum "You You Are" to you right now. Or, okay. like, imitate it.
You want
to
try?
You know, it's too... Yeah, it's like... Wah, 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 wah. Like, that's not "You Are."
That's a fair point, Brad. I'm just gonna stop there and
okay, good.
Be yeah. glad that I got your answer.
Right.
Yeah, I think I agree with you though. I mean, that's why I wanted to ask you if you would consider that a riff or not.
No, that's too much nerdery, like studio nerdery. And to me, just a riff is just like you just a loud fucking amp in your face with a guitar.
Yep.
And all right. That's not what "You Are" is.
Well, this will be. I've got one that I definitely want to talk about, but I do want to say I can't let, and we'll probably focus maybe more on these, because I imagine that two of the three that I'm about to say have to mm-hmm. be on your list. There's no way okay. they're not on your list, but we'll yeah. find out. So did not go into a lot of detail, but I felt like we couldn't have a Riff Zone episode and not just mention, at least for the future, State, Rearview Mirror, and Animal.
Yes.
Now, like, those are all songs where I can't put them at the top of my favorite. If we were doing, like, a favorite riff kind of, like, competition or list or whatever.
Right.
I just couldn't put any of these at the top. But you can't talk about Pearl Jam guitar riffs without those songs, I feel like, you know.
Right. It's funny, those three mm-hmm. are literally like in my list, they're one right after the another.
Really?
Yeah,
that's like, funny.
I just yeah, so State, Animal, and then the Rearview Mirror.
Yep, that's what I have down.
But I didn't have them, I didn't choose those for today.
Yeah, well, perfect, me either. Those are kind of like so, ones like honorable mentions. I'm like, well, we have to mention them, but we're probably not going to talk too
yeah,
much
because
about them today.
I think we said that we are going to do a few of these Riff Zone episodes, because I can just hear
just
people like,
many.
How did they not say, you know, this or that or Hail Hail, you know? And it's like, it's coming. It's
hold
we're gonna
spread your fucking horses.
Yeah.
I'm preemptively telling everyone to hold their fucking
yes.
horses.
Yes. Yes. Stand
okay.
down.
Yeah, so those are all great riffs. We will, mm-hmm. like we just said, get to those in the next Riff Zone. But I have to say something about Last Exit. Me, I just like that's up there because it sounds really nasty and complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's two of the most basic chords. Like, beginners know these two chords on
yeah.
guitar. You know, it's just a C and a F sharp over D, and those two chords don't normally go back to back with each other either. That's why it sounds so weird. They both fit into the same key, but I don't think I've ever, I shouldn't say that. It would not be a normal thing for me to write with those two chords back to back, but somehow Stone was like, let's take two really simple chords that everybody knows and let's do something really weird with it, and I'll tell you what, we're going to change the time signature to 5/4 just because I'm Stone Gossard. I imagine this is how he talks to himself as well.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm Stone Gossard, and I'm going to take a C and a F sharp over D, and I'm going to rock the fuck out of them. And guess what?
I'm going to make it work.
He did.
Yeah.
He really, really did. And the funny thing is, I was getting on to you last night on the phone. I'm like, Brad, this is what you cannot do tomorrow.
Right.
You cannot say, you know, whatever song. And then, well, yeah, tell me about that. I don't know, man. I just like it. I'm not a guitar player. I can't tell you why I like it. It's like, if you do that, I will murder you. But guess what? I'm about to do that with you with this song. I just love it. And right. I just said a little bit about it, but that doesn't even really sum it up. I can't tell you why I love it so much. I just do.
Now, as a non-guitar player, mm-hmm. this might be a stupid question.
No.
But is it hard to play, like to go from one weird chord to another?
I'm gonna swallow my pride here and say that I don't know why. But going back from those two shapes on the guitar, for mm-hmm. me, really fucks with my head.
Yeah.
It's like really, I screw it up a lot.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
If I'm like kind of warming up or I'm grabbing my guitar, just like watching TV or something, like it's not uncommon for me to just have a guitar with me and I'm just kind of like noodling or whatever. And I catch myself, I'll start kind of, I don't know, just watching TV, playing through Pearl Jam songs, and I'll get to Last Exit, and I'm like, oh, God. I mean, I just played, not 30 seconds before, the entire Alive solo, note for right. note, but right. I'm messing up C and D two. Over F sharp.
Yeah.
It's really weird. So for me, for some weird reason, yeah, it's really hard. It just doesn't make any sense, but it is. Was that song anywhere on a possible list for you?
Actually, no.
Huh.
I think because... not. It is a weird... it does sound weird. Like, that song is weird. And it, you kind of explaining... It is weird.
That song's weird. It's weird. It's like weird.
You explaining why it's weird makes more sense to me, but it also seems like it's a kind of a simple riff.
It is, yeah.
Which isn't bad. It just didn't make my list.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I think part of it is just I'll always remember, you know, the first, it's an opening track. It's a track one, and those are usually some memorable moments because at least back in the day, before there was a lot of leaks and that kind of stuff with records, like you had been waiting, like they had announced the record 6 months before, right. You had been waiting yeah. forever. And you're finally going to get to hear this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it fucking hits like a bomb. I mean, that snare drum just going off.
Oh, yeah, dude. For sure. Oh, God, I love it. All right. Well, you think we should stop there and kind of we can have a part two?
Yeah, we could do that.
Was there anything that you felt like you needed to, any songs you needed to put out there?
For this? Let's do one more.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, let's end on Satan's Bed.
Ah, a kind of a brother weird... or sister song to do the evolution in my head.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, just that weird, funky... Yeah, I love that.
Very chromatic. Again, not melodic. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that means? I'm not being a smart aleck. Do you know what that means?
No.
Okay. Like, melodic, you think of, like, intervals, like, you know, do, re, fi, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's very musical. 1-3-5-3-1, that kind of thing. Whereas mm-hmm. chromatic is just like half steps. Bah, 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 bah. It doesn't feel musical.
Yeah, that's right? What I like about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That he knows how to do that so well.
Hmm.
Okay, good talk.
But...
continue.
No, what did I write here? Oh, the riff, I like the chorus riff, too. Dan, 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 dan. It's just...
oh, yeah, that's right. That's a cool, chordal riff.
It's very simple,
in contrast to this weird, funky, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, but it's cool. It's like a hard driving, simple riff that just works so well against that funky riff during the verses.
Sure. I concur. And it's weird. It's like one of their kind of nasty, heavier, but quirky songs. Like, again, mm-hmm. I think of Do the Evolution as well when I hear the song.
Yeah.
And it's not even a drummer. It's just a drum machine.
Right.
You know? Because yeah. I guess, what was it? Is that Dave A had already been kind of let go? And they had like a drum machine version of the drum tech did or something?
Yeah, it was the drum tech. I don't think he was gone yet.
Okay.
I think he wasn't around.
Yeah.
So they just went used ahead and
the
did
drum
it.
Machine.
Yeah.
Right on.
But I don't know. I don't know. Be interesting to ask him about that.
Ask him. Just call him up.
Yeah, I'll Facebook. Right, I'll messenger him on Facebook.
All right. You just get back to me with that answer, all right?
Well, it might be 6 months, but hopefully he'll respond.
Fair enough. All right, cool. Well, I think that was a good first run at some riff zone combo.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yes.
That was fun. That was so fun.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to talk about something different every once in a while instead of...
Not so heavy.
Yeah, trying to go so deep on one certain subject.
I concur, my friend. All right. That's it for this week. Hope you enjoyed episode 71. We'll be back next week. We're getting so close to Christmas, man.
I know. I know it.
Do
you want to talk about next week or just save it?
We'll just save it.
Next week?
It's not a secret.
Yeah.
What? No? Well, I mean, next week what?
Next Monday is Christmas Eve. So ooh, that should give you a good clue of what we're doing.
Awesome. I didn't realize that it was Christmas Eve.
A week from today is Christmas Eve.
That's cool, man. Well, we'll be back next week. We'll be back. Yeah. If you would like to email us, the email address is singlepodcasttheory@gmail.com. You can hit us up on all the socials. Say hey to Brad B. And what else we need? Oh, we got patreon.com if you'd like to support the show. That's patreon.com/singlepodcasttheory. All the info is there. And that's it. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Brad Lyons.
And I'm Brad Blazek saying, baby, let yourself fall. I'm right below you now.
Aw, thanks, hon.
Yeah.
You gonna catch me when I fall?
I will. Catch me, I'm falling. Remember that song?
Oh, yeah. I was listening to it this morning.
Oh, cool.
Nope. Bye.
I died and you watched. I died and you walked by and said, no, I'm dead.
Ah, that was fine. Fuck yeah.